All right, Klaatu, Fedora.
Not me, Ken Fallon.
Ken I Fallon, deny Fedora.
Deny all knowledge of this topic. No, not at all.
You know you've been requesting it for the past hour.
Yeah,
that's true.
Nobody's going to say it. I'm going to say it. I like it. I use it. You should too.
Only if you're desperate. No, back in, when was it, Klaatu, that you posed that question to me?
I don't know. I barely remember it. Was it like a year ago?
Well, it's actually longer. Way back when I was doing some distro hopping, I decided, I'm a Debian guy anyway, so I decided I would try out Fedora on the request of Klaatu, and I installed it, and it just went absolutely wrong badly. And this is Fedora
14?
Posting.
Is he dropping out, or is it just me?
No, Ken is cutting in and out. His light is even blinking on and off.
Okay.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I tried Fedora 10, 11. 11, I think it was. And I had a bad experience with it, insofar as it didn't install, and I got into dependency hell, a thing which Klaatu claims doesn't exist. So when I brought that up to Klaatu, he, of course, the bad apples claimed that that was something that didn't happen, and determined to prove that he was wrong, I decided to install Fedora. And obviously I was going to install the KDE version of Fedora. Now, not a lot of you will probably be surprised when you hear that this review is about Fedora 14, when in fact Fedora 16 has been out for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. But as a Debian guy, one of the things that is touted mostly about the distro is the ability to do a dist update. So my plan was I was going to install the latest Fedora on my machines. I was going to live with it for at least one release cycle, and then at the end of the release cycle, I was going to do a dist upgrade, I was going to do an update to the next release. And I documented my journey word for word, and I have it in a text file, which I'll go and look up now. So the install actually was, I thought, a bit of a cheat. I don't know what you think of the install, Klaatu. The fact that it just seems to copy the ISO image onto the hard disk. But I guess, anyone got any comment on that? Or
I've always rather liked it, to be honest, because it's just so fast. It does mean that I think sometimes there's a lot of setup afterwards, because you might not have applications that you want to have on there because the ISO images are pretty small, at least the ones that I download. But I mean, I don't know. It seems really fast to me, which I like.
Personally, I thought it was a bit of a cheat, but then, you know, after thinking about it for a while, I thought, well, you know, why bother? Why go to all this trouble of actually installing everything if you have a base image that you can do that from? So right there, I was one way or the other, really, as to how I was thinking about it. I didn't really think it was that good a way of doing it. But actually now I think, well, you know, why go through the trouble of doing a full install if you can get away with that? So anyway, shall I go through the list step by step of what I did? And I just want to say that I also then went on after a while and updated not to Fedora 15, but I updated to Fedora 16. And these are my experiences. And to be fair, I also did a fresh install of both of them on different machines just to validate what I was doing was right or wrong. Okay. So one thing that I did like out of the box, and that was that both Fedora 14 and Fedora 16 allowed you to tick the box to do an encrypted disk. Now, anybody at all listening to the show who has got a mobile device, laptop, phone, whatever, should be using an encrypted disk. There is no excuse for anybody, any IT industry, not to be running an encrypted disk. Anyone disagree with me? Speak now or forever hold your peace.
I am not going to specifically disagree, but I'm going to take the opportunity to ask you a question about that. And I'm going to ask if having having an older machine with a slower processor is an excuse for not encrypting a disk.
No, it's no, no excuse. And the reason for that is because I remember reading about it, and if somebody wants to do an in-depth HBR series about it, that would be great. But once you do the unlocking, then everything is just a fairly fast hash that goes down to your disk. So there is no loss of speed that I can see. And I'm running on like really slow machines that I found on the junkyard, basically, at work and at home. Actually, the machine that I'm recording, doing this one on, is an Acer Aspire 1, the original series. Admittedly, I've updated the hard disk in it to be a actual fast move, or, you know, a real hard disk. Although it's something like an iPod, the original iPod hard disk. And I got it with 1 gig of RAM. And the reason I didn't upgrade to Fedora 15, actually, was because it ran Fedora, KDE version of Fedora on this little netbook is just so perfect that I didn't want to touch it. But then when I came back from OgCamp, I thought, well, okay, I'll update to 16. And that has had no, you know, the full disk encryption has no effect on speed. Okay, I'll move on. On Fedora 14 and on Fedora 16, on Fedora 16, the make USB disk utility didn't create a USB boot disk from a Fedora image, whereas UnetBootin does. So there you go.
That has not been my experience, just FYI.
Documented with screenshots, folks. No, I don't have screenshots of that, but that is on
14
on two
or
machines.
16.
16, on Fedora 16 on my Acer Aspire 1 and on a Dell machine.
I literally just made like 3 boot USB drives over the holidays from Fedora 16. Updated, I guess. It's probably all updated, but I mean, it works as expected. You mean from like a fedora.iso or whatever? You create a USB image.
Yeah, you download the image of KDE and then you do it. On Fedora 14, I didn't have this issue. On Fedora 16, I did. But the same image, if I use UnetBootin, it would create it. Now, I will probably say this isn't necessarily a Fedora issue. It could be that, you know, it's not doing all the funky checks that it's a USB disk, a USB floppy disk, a USB CD-ROM, or whatever. So it might be just that UnetBootin has more of those options, and I'm trying to boot it on crappier, older hardware.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I do a make DOS FS first. I don't know why, I just do. And then I do the live USB creator, and I've made 2 without a persistent partition and 1 with a persistent partition, and they both they boot fine.
Okay, well, it's not a showstopper on you, because if you do yum search unit bootin, actually doesn't install. I let go of my finger of the push to talk thing. There's no UnetBootin in the repositories that I could find, but I was able to install it from the website. So one thing that was different in Fedora 16 to Fedora 14 was that the OpenSSH server was already installed, but not running, but it was definitely a nice addition. And I will go down through the list of the applications that I installed in the order that I installed them. And I'll give you the reasons why I installed them in this order. So I install OpenSSH server first, and then I install Synergy. And I don't know if anyone knows about Synergy.
This is is this the mouse thing that spans different screens, or is that some mouse?
That's the one.
Cool.
It's a cross-platform GNU utility that runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux, and it allows you from one server, one machine to run the server and all the other ones connect in. The config file is really simple to use, and it allows you to move your mouse over to the left-hand side of the screen, and then it pops to the right-hand screen of the machine that's on the left. And then you move your mouse back and you pop it over on the right hand of your screen and come in the left hand side of the screen that's on your right, regardless of the operating system. hours and hours and hours of fun to be had with your coworkers if you install that on their machine.
That is insanely cool.
I had no idea Synergy was a GNU project. I am sold.
100%. I don't think it's a GNU project. I think it's licensed under GNU. Hold on, let me just check that. Actually, somebody in the chat room check that.
I may not be sold then.
I definitely don't think it's a GNU project, but I think it is definitely open source.
Okay, cool.
So
I didn't mean to distract you.
No, you go ahead and confirm that while I'm waffling on here. So the idea being that I have OpenSSH and Synergy running, and the idea being then that you can do anything from your main machine via the console, obviously, to do the setup, and then if there's any clicky mousey stuff that you need to do, you run it with Synergy. And Synergy's install will tell you that if you want to do it over a secure connection, that you should tunnel it via SSH anyway, so that's the way to go there. So there was actually no problem getting, obviously, SSH running on Fedora Red Hat-based machines. The only thing that you need to do is set it to run on reboot, and you do that by typing chkconfig, check config, space, sshd, space, on. Now, that was in Fedora 14, and since then, they've updated their system. So you use system control space start space sshd dot service, and then system control, that's systemctl space enable space sshd dot services, and that helpfully was on the oracle-base.com articles Linux Fedora installation PHP 2 thing website. Links in the show notes for this episode whenever it comes available. Everyone following me so far?
I am.
Yes, sir.
So cool to be able to get some feedback from the audience. Anyway, one thing I did really, really like about Fedora, out of the box, comes with a firewall. And it also comes with something else which I want to talk to you about later on. Pipeman, I hear your music in the background.
Really?
Yep, you've been on. I can hear you. I think you're not on push to talk or something.
My mixer was turned down all the way.
Okay, don't worry about it. Anyway, but you can continue playing in the background. Something bluesy.
Yeah, it's touching. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Ken's journey through his Fedora
yeah,
install.
Yeah.
So the firewall was really cool.
Quit complaining, Klaatu. You posted the challenge.
I don't remember this. Ken is telling me I challenged him. I don't exactly remember challenging him, but I don't want to argue that point while we're arguing Fedora.
There was a whole period there where there were more Fedora ambassadors in the Ogcast Planet IRC channel than there was real ambassadors in the UN, if that's to be said. Anyways, so the firewall was really cool. Didn't really have a lot of problems with it. The only thing I needed to do on both occasions was both of Fedora 14 and Fedora 16 was to do a reload restart when I started SSH. But other than that, it didn't get in the way at all the entire time. Yep. You happy so far, Klaatu?
I'm all right, but I'm sensing, you know, it's the calm that's before the storm. You're gonna lash out any minute now. I'm waiting for it.
Now, Pipeman Music, could you change to the change the theme, background theme music now, because we're about to get to, and then it all went wrong.
Ooh, controversy.
Yes. Then I did, this is Fedora 14 now, we're reviewing Fedora 14 at this point, remember. From a default MD5 checksummed website installed approximately a month or so after the release, and I went to do a package update. And it aborted on the GUI with the error message, two packages provide the same file. On and on and on and on and on. And then it was suggesting that I erase NTFS-3G and erase KD Multimedia Libs, which then fixed everything. Yeah. So this was a bit of a downer for Fedora 14 because I thought, well, you know, here's really dependency hell, and as a Debian guy, you never ever see this. However, I do want to come back to that later. Then I went into the console, into a new tab. I added myself to the sudo group and restarted all that good stuff. Then I went over to RPM Fusion to add the which would be equivalent to the Debian multimedia archive. So these are the perfectly valid GNU applications like I'm at a loss here. What's the MP3 codec called? Anyone?
Lame.
Lame.
Thank you. Lame and those type of things over at rpmfusion.org. Now, the only I know Fedora have a very strict stance on their definition of free, and they don't want to distribute anything that's illegal. But stuff like that, I think, should be. If you're in an area that doesn't have software patents, why should we suffer that somebody else lives in an area that does have software patents?
I totally agree with that point. I think we should be using LAME just for that specific reason, that software patents are wrong, specifically the one against a thing like LibLAME.
I'm sure that it's probably because Red Hat is hosting a huge portion of the Fedora infrastructure. So, they're on U.S. soil, so I'm sure they're playing it very safe for that reason. I'm not saying I agree, but I'm sure that's the reason.
Yeah, I agree. From not being a lawyer, I agree from my perception of what's a legal standpoint, that they have to do that to protect themselves. And they've got lawyers, I'm sure, who understand that and are good to go as far as that goes. But as far as a user, I think we should be installing and using these codecs, whenever we can. But sorry to digress.
Yeah, but see, I'm digressing here, but I don't know if I agree with that either, because honestly, I kind of like having a Fedora system where the support for proprietary codecs is optional. I don't
but it's
necessarily
not a proprietary
have that
here.
On my system.
It's
I might not even
software.
Bother putting it on that system, depending on what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and I think I fall in between the two of you guys on that perspective, where I agree. I much prefer having a system that's all free software, or at least open source software and not proprietary. But LibLame is free software, and I like it for that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Patent encumbrance is a legal issue, and I am not a big fan of lawyers. So.
Same.
Okay, so now that I've stirred it up a little bit, then one thing that this did bring up that was quite annoying, and I've seen it still in Fedora 16, is the pop under authentication button. So if you need, and you're in the GitHub GUI and you click on something that requires escalation of privileges, quite often you're sitting there wondering what's happened, and then underneath there's a prompt that's prompting you for the administrator password.
That might be because you have window stealing set to be very low, such that. The time that the time that the focus is stolen from the current window is very infrequent. I don't think that's a Fedora issue. I think that's
it is because it's but it's a KDE Fedora distribution distributed me this out of the box with that setting on.
Right.
But it's not the end of the world. It's just a minor thing.
It's annoying. It happens to me on Slackware too.
Yeah. Okay, so I clicked that, typed in the root password, because at this stage the sudo password doesn't work. Although if you reboot or log out and log back in, then it asks you for the sudo password will also work. So that's one thing. The yum updated asked me to require acknowledge the keys. And it resolved all the dependencies without any problem. However, when I did it on Fedora 14, Fedora 14, that was fine. So I installed the following packages: Audacity, FFmpeg, Sox, MPlayer, Inkscape, VLC, Vim, Firefox, Popper Utils, wget, sshfs, kdiff3, Terminator, k3b, SpeaksTools, FileZilla, and GIMP. Anyone not know any of those programs?
You listed them too fast, but I think I know them.
Repeat them again, Ken.
Ken, are you still there? I don't know if you heard.
Sorry, I'm not pressing push to talk.
Okay, yeah, someone just asked you to repeat them again.
Sure, I'll do that. So we have Audacity, which is a audio editor, very lightweight sort of notepad for audio. Also runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Then
my favorite program.
Then we have FFmpeg, which is absolutely the coolest piece of software ever. For video editing on the command line, I had to edit. Right, I'll give you the scenario, right? There's 10 minutes to a train leaving. I have 5 minutes to edit this video. All I've got is this paperclip and FFmpeg. What am I going to do? I need to edit out somebody speaking in a video conversation at a particular point. So I play it, mark down the note, extract the audio out, open the audio track in Audacity, mute that track, put it back, export it as a WAV file, import the WAV file, combining it with the original video file in with FFmpeg, and boom, video editing a video without transcoding, without any messing, without skipping or anything, in 5 minutes, literally put it on a USB stick, got on the train, went up, given the phone, and my wife did her presentation, all thanks to FFmpeg. I'm waiting for Pipeman Music to play something. Something da-da-da.
Triumphant, yeah.
So the other thing I installed,
I think
was...
I'm muted all the way now.
No, you're not. You're still... I can still see your red lips.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the lips. There's no... They're popping on and off for no reason. I don't know what it's doing.
Very weird. That's all right.
I have no explanation for that.
That's okay. It's not going across in audio, so that's it's fine.
So then I installed Sox, which is, I don't know, the Swiss Army knife of audio editors. We use it to, say, somebody uploads a NOG file, WAV file, Speaks file, whatever. Then we just use it, Sox, to convert it to MP3, AUG, and Speaks for the shows. MPlayer, because it's the best audio player, bar none. It's the best video player, bar none. It's really, really, really cool. Like, there's, you can stop podcasts while keeping the same pitch. You can, I don't know if you listen to the cchits.net show.
Oh, yes.
So every day, and there's a really long bit where it goes, ding, 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 and then goes boom, 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 right in your ear. So I use that to fast forward the first 60 seconds, and then you have the robot talking to us, and then it plays the song. It's absolutely brilliant. Inkscape is the next one, which is the vector graphics program, which if you haven't been to screencasters.heathenx.org, you should do. If anybody you know is into vector graphics or drawing or whatever, burn those movies onto a DVD, get them a copy of Inkscape and hand it to them saying, there you go, you're going to have a career, you don't need any training. Here's the training, here's the program, here's the sample files. Good luck. Bye. And the next program is VLC, which is Video LAN Client, which we use just check that the... it's also a good video player, but it's also a good audio player as well. And then I install the best text editor in the world, bar none.
Emacs.
No, actually, I could really care less about video editors, our text editors. My favorite text editor is actually Kate, so I'm use Kate all the time. But the Vim is on every machine that you're at, so it's useful to have it. Install Firefox because, hey, you install Firefox. And the popular utils are whole code of utils that does something which escapes me right now. So I'll just Google it.
I'm going to play the imaginary trumpets again because I finally just succeeded in the task you set me out to do.
Go ahead.
Synergy. I had to download the source code to find it. Synergy is released under the GPL v2.
Yes, I knew that all along.
At least we know for sure now.
But yeah, but you can't find it on their website anywhere. I had to get it in the source code. I mean, it's referred to elsewhere on the web, but I don't like to trust, you know, secondary sources for that kind of stuff. Anyway, thank you. Moving on.
No, I remember hearing Dimitri on about he did a show about it, and which really annoys me. He really annoys me because he always picks shows to do that I have intended to do as shows in Hacker Public Radio, and he does them far better than I would ever do them. So
I think we all, anyone who podcasts knows that feeling from that, from Dimitri.
Oh my God, yeah, Dimitri Lermusso, if anybody doesn't know who we're talking about, who does the Source Trunk show, he is, yeah, he's the goal. I don't know, what do you call it?
He's the subject killer, you know. Once he's talked about it, you're like, eh, it's been done now. It's been done really, really well. Why do I, you know, I can't top that.
He can get into minutia that you would turn off if anybody else did it. And he does it in such an interesting way. And instead of the whole time going, I can't to try this. Which is odd, because I do remember at all him talking about Synergy.
He did a show.
I think I do. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I remember that. I think that's how I heard about it, actually.
Do you use it, Klaatu? Do you use Synergy?
I keep meaning to, but no. I usually do at least have two computers set up on my desk at all time, if not three, but yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I'm not bothered.
I have meant to use Synergy for so long, it's not even funny, and I didn't know the name of it. So this will be my next task, you know, when we're done with all this.
Yeah, it would probably be, I mean, it's probably a great way, like I think Ken said, to just wow your coworkers. I'm sure that would just blow their minds.
Like anything that's, you know, really, truly useful, you forget the using it in no time. I've been using it so many years, I don't even remember when I started using it, but yeah, I find it invaluable. It's anytime you've got two machines next to each other, it's a necessity. It's one of those things you instantly realize when you're not running it or when you don't have it available to you, because it's easy to become dependent on it.
Someone please raise a glass to Synergy, because it sounds like this is really something that we all need to be using.
Absolutely. What I've seen happen in the last few years my friend has seen happen in the last few years in the place where Bob works, is that people, once Bob got an old PC that nobody was using and started running Linux on it, and then using Synergy to move over and back, a lot of people in Bob's workplace has also got second PCs or brought in their own laptops from home and started using Linux on it.
Is that how Bob convinced Henry Patrick Riley to use Linux?
Yeah, he's Bob and Henry are you know, best of buddies. And
I sense there's a joke here, but I'm not sure if I'm getting it.
No, you wouldn't cut to.
Okay.
Henry Patrick Riley is the name that Ken had to change HPR to on Google Plus when they were not allowing any pseudonyms.
Okay.
And I'd just like to thank Henry Patrick Riley for giving up his own personal website and sacrificing that for the team here. So, Henry, you don't need to do a show this year either, okay?
Okay, Ken, unrat-hole us. Get us back on topic.
Meanwhile, back at the point, Bob...
Yeah, because we only have 10 more hours left on this show, so we need to be, pretty efficient here.
Yeah.
I can't have 10 more hours of Fedora.
Oh, no. We are definitely talking about Crunch Bang at some point. I am not passing up this opportunity.
And then I
I'm not listening to 10 hours of that either.
Yeah, it should be 10 hours of Arch. Arch, you can do 10 hours.
Brother.
Ken,
is it 9 hours? It's not even 9 hours. What?
Crayon is claiming that in the future, Arch makes sense.
Absolutely it does. Here in 2012.
I don't know about that.
Here in 2012, Arch is awesome. But then again, it was awesome in 2011 too.
Now, is that Australian awesome, where it's actually really bad here?
Yes, very funny, very funny.
In 2011, we use Debian, Crunchbang, and Slackware. So it's I don't know.
I heard Arch. I think we should talk more about Arch.
See, there you go. Arch is good. I'm going to bed. It's 7 o'clock in the morning here, I'm not going to make it to you guys. Your New Year's. So happy New Year to everyone. Anyway.
Thanks for coming on, Crayon.
I might be back in 6 hours and you might still be going. I don't know.
That would be awesome. But yeah, thanks a lot for coming.
We'll see what happens.
Good night, Ken.
My apologies, my sincerest apologies, Ken. I still haven't uploaded an HPR episode. So technically, I guess this is my first HPR appearance. But I've been doing a Kernel
Happy
Panic.
New Year,
thanks, 5150. Yes, but I've been doing Kernel Panic Oddcast for a while now with Klaatu and Dan and all that. And that's pretty been pretty fun. And I think, you know, I one thing I wanted to say about that actually was that, you know, when you're first looking to get into it, even with, you know, HPR feeling as accessible as it is, it's still a bit daunting to think of, you know, putting your voice out there on the internet. And I kind of got sucked into to the Kernel Panic Ogcast without even thinking. And before you know it, I'd sort of done that. And so now I feel a lot more comfortable, I think, to be able to put out an HPR episode and things like that. But I think, yeah, it's great that HPR exists, because I think it's a very good entry for most people. And it would have been my first had I not managed to get onto KPO first. But yeah, wow. Thanks to everyone.
Who would have thought of Kernel Panic as being the gateway drug to Hacker Public Radio?
Yeah, not me. But that show's quality is such that, yeah, anyone could probably come in and join in on that one. It's that is a pretty low entry point.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm a pretty bad example.
No.
I must say, the Kernel Panic podcast is one of my favorite podcasts right now at the minute. So keep it going.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, subscribe. If you don't know what we're talking about, just search and subscribe.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a lot of fun being on that. But yeah, thank you to everyone for the HPR episodes and everything. I get it. I love listening to them. So anyone who's made it, I listen to every episode. So if you've made an episode, I've listened to it and I probably enjoyed it. So thank you to whoever it was who did it. Thanks to everyone anyway. And good night and goodbye from 2012. And see you when you get here.
Is it the year of the Linux desktop?
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, it is. Funnily enough, I look around and all I see is Linux desktops all around me, so it must be.
Oh, I keep saying it, but tip of glass.
Indeed.
Happy New Year, Crayon.
Thank you, yes. Happy New Year to everyone. And I'll see you when you get here. Enjoy the rest of 2011. And Ken, continue on with your Fedora garbage stuff now.
Thank you. Maybe having a live audience isn't a good idea after all.
Sorry. I didn't. What I mean is Fedora's garbage, not your
more explanation. More heckling.
Ken, remember, he's Australian, so garbage means brilliant.
That's right.
Hey, Crayon, one thing I want to ask you about, have you got the radio meter working yet?
Oh, no. I need to get back onto that, too. Yeah. That's one of my 700 projects that I've yet to finish.
That's a great project, and it's a great example of collaboration too. Because when that finally happens, it is going to be a very fun.
Let me know when you want to test it. That way, I can get that iPad song that Chad plays for you.
The wonderful. Thanks. That's in my head now. Thank you, Claudio. It's playing in my head right now. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Happy New Year.
Thanks. All right. See you guys.
What exactly is the radio meter for those
Wouldn't
of us who
like
don't
to know?
Don't make me play the song.
it was. I'm not sure what was happening. It was a discussion. I don't even remember now. But I think was it you, Pokey, or someone who mentioned it, or was it Pegwell? I don't know.
Somebody, Fab, brought it up. Fab was talking about the radio meter.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
On Linux Outlaws, when he talks, people seem to get angry. Is his claim. And he was talking about that they need a radio meter to measure the amount of rage in the chat room as he's talking about specific subjects, and not at all for the reason that he would back off, but I think he'd like to see how high he can get it going some days. And I was listening to that, and I think Crayon mentioned it while I was listening to it, and it just sparked kind of it occurred to me all of a sudden how the radio meter could work if it were set up with a website, and how it could actually be kind of an effective measurement of the rage in the room. And Crayon took, you know, those kind of rules and ran with it, and he registered the domain name and everything. So it's kind of an inside joke. It's not actually anything really useful, but more of an inside joke than anything, and a fun collaboration.
Yeah, I actually registered three domains for it.
That's how you know you're a true geek, when just one domain for a single purpose isn't enough.
It's not a purpose, is the part about it. It's one domain for a useless joke.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I've got it both with and without hyphens, and possibly net and org, I'm not sure.
When it works, you do an HPR on it. Sorry, 5150, I walked on you.
I was just going to say, don't forget you have to preemptively grab triple X now.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, anyone got a spare?
Yeah, those are expensive, aren't they? Just get those. For
what a scam. What a horrible scam. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
The worst part is. The worst part is all the buying up all their domains, you know, to avoid the inevitable porn sites or whatever that will appear
it's
otherwise.
It's a bit like blackmail. Yeah, it's blackmail, you know. It's like, we're going to release this thing that's going to automatically have a stigma attached to it, so you better get yours now before someone else does and stigmatizes you.
Yeah, here's a rat hole we could spend a lot of time on, but it was just wrong. It was FUD, really, even, that caused the XXX domain to happen.
Yeah, I think the adult industry didn't particularly want it either.
The whole domain name stuff is really bad. I mean, in Australia, I noticed they changed recently. Unlike with the comms, you know, our com.au ones require that you present, you know, a certificate of business registration or something to prove that, you know, you have some kind of claim to the name for the .com.au domains, which was great because it meant that, you know, if you went to something.com.au, it was most likely going to be the company in question. And I noticed a few years ago, I think it was, they changed one line in it that it originally said something like it had to be the name of your company or the name of a primary product that you produce. And they changed it to say, or it has to be the product itself. So thereby, of course, allowing you to purchase a domain in the event that that domain is what you're going to sell, which, of course, that's what the squatters are doing. So all it did was then allow for squatters to, you know, to purchase the com.au domains and sit on them just like they do with the com ones now. And it's pathetic and it's wrong. I mean, I don't know about how it all works over there, but here that's all run by a, you know, the government gave it to some company to run and they basically do what they want now from what it seems.
Okay. Shall I continue on then?
Sorry, Ken. I'll leave now.
have a good night. I know it's hard.
Go into space, Crayon.
Yeah, well, I'm my head's a bit unscrewed because it's 7:30 or something. But yeah.
But it's been really fun. But thank you for coming on. It's really special having people literally all over the globe on this call, and you're part of that, man. Thanks so much.
Well, someone has to represent down under, so yeah.
Now go to bed.
All right, I'm off.
I'm not going to believe he's really gone until his nick disappears.
All right, I can't just squat in here then.
Nobody's going to talk until Crayon disappears from the
channel. Go away.
No secret Australian spy stealing our secrets.
he does that
all the time. I was glad to see Crayon.
Yeah, now that he's gone, we can say that. Because he'll change his nick. He'll put Crayon asleep, and he'll just comment all night long.
Okay, meanwhile, the last time we were talking about Fedora. Actually, we were talking about the applications that they installed in Fedora, one of which was Synergy, one of which really cool gateway drug to Linux, because you say, or Bob gets asked, or Henry or whoever gets asked, how do you configure this Synergy thing so that I only need one keyboard and mouse on my desktop? And you go, oh, I don't know how to do it on Windows, but if you do it on Linux, it's really easy. You just do this. And then all of a sudden, the main keyboard and mouse is the Linux computer. See how I do that? Very sneaky. Anyway, the other thing I install is a Poplar library, which is a way that you can play around with PDF files. Whole go tools for doing that, like PDF grep and stuff like that. Then I install wget. Presumably everybody knows what wget is. Yes, silence. And its counterpart, wput. Everybody heard of wput?
Wput's a new one for me.
I thought it might be. It's a way to, if you're familiar with wget, wput does the same thing, but in reverse. Really, really cool. And it also understands proxy servers, so you can get through where an FTP might have an issue getting through a SOX proxy. Wput will just steamroll right on through there.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You're welcome.
Hey, Ken, I got a question, because I have used wget on a couple occasions, but what do you think of Excel? Have you tried that?
Excel, the application from Microsoft?
No, sir. Excel, AXEL, I believe, is it's like wget. It does the same thing, but it will do it at several servers at a time. So it'll grab, you know, multiple pieces of a file. It's almost like a BitTorrent version of wget.
Yes. Accelerates HTTP download process by using multiple connections for one file that can use multiple numbers for download. Yes, that is that would be excellent, except what I'm usually downloading with wget is from a particular server that has only got one thing on it. So I want to download log files from a particular server.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure if you'd ever used them or compared the two.
Never even heard of it before now, but I'm sure I will enjoy your HPR episode on it in the coming weeks.
No, there already was an HPR episode on it. I heard it from DeepGeek.
No.
Yeah, honest to God, DeepGeek did. He mentioned it. I don't know if he did the whole show on it, but he covered it really well.
I can't remember that, and I have listened to every show. I pride myself on this thing. Okay, I'll no doubt you'll pick up the episode for me. So the next thing I install is SSHFS. I presume everybody knows this as well. Allows you to connect drives over the SSH program. And then I do kdiff3, which is just a graphical version to compare two files. And I install the GNOME application Terminator because it is my terminal of choice right now. I have a widescreen, and I open that up one main screen in landscape mode, and then four or five small ones on the right-hand side, one for the IRC channel, one for mPlayer, one for launching programs, and another one for just doing stuff locally on my machine. KID3, we use Pokey, I think it was you who did an episode on that, which is an ID3 tagger for MP3. We have the Speaks tools for generating the Speaks file for HPR, FileZilla for uploading the files, and the GIMP for doing image manipulation. So, some other things I do in to make KDE look nice is I turn off in the task manager settings, I turn off grouping because I just hate that, and then I turn it on so that each of my virtual desktops only shows the windows for that virtual desktop. And here's something that I really want to complain to all distros about, with the exception of Crunchbang, actually. And that is that you go through the install and you pick your local locale is the Netherlands and your local keyboard is US. So that's fine. So that's a bit confusing. So I can accept that it wouldn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So then I go in and change the date format to YYYY-MM-DD, so year, month, day. And nobody should be using any other date format than that. Thank you. All right. Everyone agree with that?
Why? And
the reason, because if you do an LS or a sort, then, and this bugs me about podcasts, actually, who upload a show episode 3.3 or 3.4 or 4.3. You don't know what it is. And it doesn't sort properly. So you're playing on your crappy MP3 player or media player, and it's playing based on the day of the month as opposed to the month and then the day. So if you have to put a date in, always put the year first, full four digits, month, full two digits, and the day, full two digits. It's a whopping total of 8 digits that you actually have to type, but it makes life so much, so much easier.
Hey, Ken. Cannot let this joke from IRC go unspoken, and I don't know why Azimuth didn't say it himself because he's in the room, but yes, WPUT is the Australian WGET.
Oh, that's good.
All right, fellas, I'm going to bout. I wish you all a very happy new year for those of you already there. Hope it's a good one so far, and looking forward to a lot more HPR episodes in 2012. Take it easy, guys.
Happy New Year, Claudio. Thank you.
See you, Claudio.
Looking forward to Linux Basement episodes, Claudio.
Okay. There actually is a WPUT, apparently, as Bobo Bex just pasted into the Mumble chat. There's literally a WPUT, just FYI.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't making it up. It's for putting files up to a web server.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know this one.
That's really cool. Okay,
I've got your back here.
Sorry, does WPUT work over... like if you're going to upload an HPR episode?
No reason why I wouldn't, yeah. It's the easiest. You can use WCFTP or one of those things, which allows you to script it. But it's got a very archaic, Solaris admins seem to be able to get their head around it for some reason, but I've always had trouble with it, whereas I found the syntax for WPUT to be a lot easier But then again, I guess I'm more used to the wget syntax.
You're saying that you can script wput or you can't?
You can, absolutely, 100%.
That's where I was getting at, something to automate an upload of a file.
Yeah, maybe I'll do an episode on that, just on wget and, or sorry, wput and other FTP options.
So can I
consider it officially requested by me?
Super. Can I do a total noob sidetrack here?
Sure.
Okay, so it has been explained to me, and I don't know whether it's correct or incorrect because I didn't get it from HPR, but it has been explained to me that the hypertext transfer protocol literally has only like, what, 4 or 5 commands? There's and of them, get and put are 2, and put is not often used. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, I think.
Okay, yeah, so like, what's, sorry?
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think, isn't that post is another one of them? Is that correct?
That was my next question, is what are they? What is the full list?
That's what Google's for, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you run HTTP Fox in Firefox, I think it's that one, you can see all the traffic going back and forth between the page that you're talking to and the server you're getting the information from, and you'll see all the you'll see all of them go fly by in that kind of thing. I don't remember them all off the top of my head, all 4 of them. I think we've got 3 now, right?
Yeah. Well, when I'm talking about wput, it's an actual program that you apt-get or yum install wput. It's a different thing. It just
and it's
uses...
basically a front end for FTP, right, Ken? That's what it's looking like.
Yeah, but you can also do HTTP puts and post on web pages and stuff as well with it, I think.
Oh, okay.
Although okay, I use so this as an FTP client.
So they're less akin than I'm assuming they are.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, I'm backing off.
That's why it was a noob sidetrack.
Does Crayon is saying that my audio is bad, which brings up
no.
2 questions. 1, is my audio bad? And 2, Crayon, go to bed.
It's only Australian bad. It's good for the rest of us.
Yeah, it sounds good fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he was going to bed.
Sound fine to me, Ken.
Okay, cool. I'll continue on it. Anyway, here's the thing, right? You select that your country is NL. And it insists on changing all the separators and commas to dots and the separators to, sorry, the you know, decimal separator to comma and the thousand separator to a dot. Yet, it doesn't change the paper size to A4. So I find that amazing in every distro that still is the case. It really annoys me.
Wait, what? I'm sorry, what doesn't change it?
Right, you go into any distro, I think uh-huh. CrunchBang is the exception, and you select, you know, what's your locale? The Netherlands, yeah? And it's able to change some of them go so far as to change the keyboard to a Dutch layout that nobody in the Netherlands uses. It also changes the date format, so it's day, month, year. It also changes the number format so that the periods that you normally use, like $1.50, like 1.50. Yeah. In the Netherlands, you use a comma for that. So it changes the 1.50 to 1.50 if you type it in. And the decimal separator they use is a period as opposed to a comma. So it goes to the trouble of changing all that. But something as simple as everybody here prints on A4, there is no letter, none. So it still leaves all the printer configurations with letter. And I'm just wondering, is there a technical reason? Actually, what we really need on the channel is somebody who has their own distro and might be able to tell us if that's something that's easy to change.
But Ken, where are we going to find that person?
I don't know. Pipeman Music, quick, play us something exciting and...
I'll just wake him up.
Do you want...
All right. Well, I was just having a beer, actually, and chilling out. Yeah, locales is it's a funny old thing on Linux, isn't it? The only thing I can imagine why it would probably work on CrunchBang and not any other for Ken is by default I set up CrunchBang to work on UK settings. So, you know, and we have A4 paper.
See, I would have thought that was being controlled by the printer driver itself. That's what I would have assumed.
But the printer driver is included in the distribution, I think is the point.
Yeah, I mean, if Carnominal can change it, then surely everybody else can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how does he catch it and Shuttleworth misses it?
Well, Shuttleworth doesn't do Fedora, in fairness. Although he may have, but this review has gone on so long that he may have bought the company since then. Anyway, I'm going to speed up. I do a passwordless login, and I know you're all shocked and stunned to hear that, but I've just encrypted my hard disk, remember? So when I turn on my computer, I type in my really, really, really long password, and then that's enough for me to be able to log in, because, you know, why bother entering a password in twice? Anyone have a problem with that? No.
I'm outraged.
Yeah, absolutely shocked.
Super. Actually, I should do a review on CrunchBang as well, but anyway, I'll continue on. So I install HP IJS because it wants me to, and then I do the checkpoint SSL extender thing. And this is a major advantage if you're trying to recommend a distro to somebody, and you know, CrunchBang, you have to forgive me about this, but if you're recommending a distro to somebody who's intending to use it for work purposes or in work, then it is really important for you to consider Fedora, simply because the Red Hat in the enterprise, the Linux distribution in the enterprise is Red Hat. It's as simple as that. I know that Ubuntu would like it to be something else, and Debian has a lot of inroads on the HP side, but a lot of proprietary vendors will release their code for Red Hat. And then what you see is that Red Hat makes it very, very easy to install things like the missing libraries that you will need to install Checkpoint or other applications like Citrix, for example. And I have, if you go to my own website, which is kenfallon.com, and you click on the, you just search for Citrix or SNX over there, you'll see that for to install Fedora 16, it's actually, as opposed to the equivalent for Ubuntu or indeed CrunchBang or something like that, where you need to install a lot of missing libraries. And it's right here that I want to point out to the Debian lovers one major thing that I've noticed about Yum, which I absolutely love. And that is, if you install a program, like in this case Checkpoint, and you do an LDD for the program, and you grep or not space found, it'll give you that libstandardc++.so.5 is not found. What you can do is just simply type yum install and the file name, and what it does is it goes out, finds what package it's in, and asks you, would you like to install it from this package? And you simply install it. It is really, 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 really nice. Would you agree, Tattoo?
Yeah, and I want to say that that's either a fairly recent feature or it's just something I didn't really understand fully. But I want to say it's kind of a fairly recent feature. And yeah, it is really nice.
Just to point out, there is, I think there's something called apt, is it apt file? Where you can just do apt file and then maybe the file name. And that'll tell you what Debian package the file's in. So then you can just install it via apt-get.
Nice, I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, I was aware of that one, but it's also another one of these apt utilities that you need to download. It's not installed by default. And it also goes to prove that in Plateau's series here in HPR about the package manager series, probably every package manager can do all these things. It's just I haven't been bothered to sit down and read about it. But
yeah, I think that's very, very true.
Yeah, agreed.
This was one that... So... then the next thing I needed to install was 32-bit support for Fedora, which again was quite easy. The Citrix client was also quite easy. And I must say I also like something that was a problem in Fedora 14 but has been fixed since, has been the left and right desktops. When you do plug in an additional monitor, that the menu switches, you know, your primary desktop switches to the largest monitor, which isn't necessarily the one that you want, or vice versa. And you can use XR and R, that's XRANDR-Q to get your terminal settings, and then you can specify XR and R --output. And in my case, LVDS1-primary, and that will set the the monitor that, you know, your main monitor, to be, say, for example, you plug in a laptop and you have a plug in a big screen, then you run that and it'll set the big screen to be the, you know, the one with the menu as opposed to having to go to your little laptop with that. So then I installed Chromium because, and Flash Player, yes, because, and there's no Kate. And that was a massive big problem in Fedora 14, so much so that it led to a whole series of unresolved dependencies, which I have a text file of. And in Fedora 16, you simply type yum install Kate and it installs. It's fantastic. It's fantastic to see little things that are wrong being improved in a distro over time. It's really nice. Then I had one weird issue with audio in Fedora 16 on a machine that I upgraded, and that was to do, I didn't have any audio at all, nothing would play, and it was due to the fact that my username wasn't added to the audio group, which wasn't that easy to find, but
that is a bad bug. That should not happen.
However, if anybody among you says, you know, the 10 reasons why I don't use Linux, yeah, you see these articles coming through in your feed reader every so often when there's nothing else to write about. And they will always put in there, poor documentation. In Linux, there's a lot of programs with poor documentation. Well, folks, I ask you to just point them over to the Fedora documentation. It is fantastic. It is absolutely brilliant. Back in the day when I started using computers, in the days before the internet, Pipeman, you can play some soothing background music. Trip down memory lane music, yes. Back in those days, you would buy a novel and you would get literally a whole bookshelf full of manuals, and you needed them because there was nowhere else to look up anything, and that's where the phrase RTFM, read the manual, comes from. And take them, and everything you needed to know was in there, because if it wasn't, you weren't going to know about it because there was no other way to know about it. And Fedora produces manuals like that, and they're on the web. And all you have to do is go to the Fedora Documentation Project, and you'll find them. It's brilliant. That is all. Back then, there was no internet.
Soken, you said that you were a Debian user, and so now you're using Fedora. If you had to rate your satisfaction, maybe, or happiness of using Debian and then using Fedora, say, I don't know how, 0 to 9 or, you know, whatever, what would you give Debian and what would you give Fedora?
I would have to say that I am a Debian user. I am a Debian user. I'm a Crunchbang user. I'm a Fedora user, and I am a Linux user. So I guess it gets to a point where I don't know if Wickass was saying that, I think it was you, Klaatu, that you were saying, you know, you should live with the distro for a while and get comfortable with it. And I'm that way with Debian, but I'm now that way with Fedora as well. You know, I still find myself going apt-get install, or, you know, aptitude space install something, and then, you know, file not found, and it goes, okay, right, I'm on a Fedora machine. So to answer your question, Phenomenal.
Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when I'm running I'm on my PowerPC Debian boxes, I literally alias yum to apt-get.
So I like Debian. I like the Debian freedom aspect to it, and I see that in Fedora as well. I see both communities being the same. Dude versus yum, like yum installs something, it goes and it re-downloads all the distro archives. But to be honest, it is equal. The package manager on Debian, and I want to, Debian and I say Crunchbang are the same as yum. However, if you're comparing it to the machine that I'm on, my main machine here, I'm piping this through a Fedora machine now. But if you were to compare it to a Kubuntu install, which I have on my wife's machine, you just enter into dependency hell on what's now Ubuntu machine, or a Kubuntu machine, actually. This there's been there was a time under in the Red Hat world where you were encouraged to download RPMs, and I think that gave it a very bad reputation as far as dependency hell goes. Plateau, I think you'd have to agree with that.
Yes, I do agree with that.
And I think that was resolved mainly by using the RPM Fusion, where all the different repositories for the non-free stuff got together and give you one place that's a trusted source. So I think in the same way that you can install a Debian machine and put Debian Multimedia, which is an official, non-official repository on that's a trusted source, and then you're good to go because everything will work together. But what I see happening on Ubuntu now is you've got a personal archive for this, and it's pinning a Debian package for that, and it's doing this, and then, you know, the guy gets bored with the project and moves on, and then people are left with a pinned version that's old and doesn't work with anything else, and nothing works, and it just becomes a real mess. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. So that's all I want to say, comfortably speaking, about package managers. But would anybody agree with me about that and Ubuntu lately?
It's hard to agree for sure because I don't use Ubuntu and I'm not very close to that issue, but it does sound, that's how it strikes me. Yeah, it sounds like they are diverging more than converging, and it seems like the convergence of all that stuff was really a strength, and it seems weird to scatter it all over the place again.
I'm finding that late you can have some dependency resolution issues with Ubuntu. And I haven't used the newest one, but it seems to happen more if you've upgraded versions. I think I went from 10.04 to 10.10, or maybe even from 9.10 to 10.04 to 10.10, and I had dependency issues a couple of times.
I'm not so sure. I think it's maybe a user problem as opposed to anything else. I think there's a lot of new users on Ubuntu, which probably makes the problem worse, but I think if you know what you're doing with PPAs and stuff, you can't really go that far wrong.
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know if I necessarily agree with you.
What were you going to say here, 5150?
Right now on my laptop, I'm running my first installation I've stuck with Fedora. And I have to disagree on the whole RPM hell issue, because I've never had this kind of problem on a Debian-based system. I do really like Fedora overall, but maybe because it's my first 64-bit system, I seem to be having a lot of conflicts between x86 or the i686 version of packages and the x86_64 versions. Just an example. And it's probably my own fault for being too ignorant when I installed Fedora, because I clicked both the standard and the update repos. But the problem that I've been having, and it came up a couple months after I set up the system, if I go to install a package, let's say I want to put in install KDN Live. If I type in yum install KDN Live, I get a package not found. So if I do yum search KDN Live, I can see if there's both a .i686 package and a .x86_64, which of course is a 64-bit package that I want. And that's not really a problem. I find that I can do that. But I've been told in the hash Fedora I shouldn't be having that problem. So let's
which is
take
probably
this
your point to begin with.
Right. But so I go yum install KDN Live dash and version number, which I found with yum search, although I won't bore you with that, .x86-64. And then a lot of times it'll fail. In that particular case, it failed with protecting multi-connection kit dash version number is bang equal, of course, not equal to Jack. I'm sorry, I should start over. So some library dot version number .i686 is not equal to same library, a couple versions later number, it's always a higher number on the 64-bit side, .x86-64, and suggesting using --skip broken, which doesn't work. One way I found around it is yum downgrade package name. Sometimes that works, but more often than not, that hasn't worked at all. I found some.
I think we just entered hell.
Sorry about it. I should let up on the key once in a while, I think.
Sorry, an RPM.
But hell. Well, exactly. My whole problem from the start, I should have done more research on installing Fedora. I'm just, my point is, I've been having more package problems in Fedora than I've ever had in a Debian-based system.
Well, I had I had the same sort of issues for a while, but I also was getting that on the Debian system when I wanted to install a 32-bit on a 64 machine. I got exactly the same issues, but from the other side. I found that yum was a lot easier because I just go yum install .i386, enter, and then it had done it. And then if I was missing anything with LDD, I just install, you know, kept going yum install missing file, yum install missing file, yum install missing file until it was done. And I had the opposite thing on a Debian system where it was completely...
Yeah, I think they're fixing for the next release, Wheezy. I can't remember what the... what the system is, what it's called. It escapes me at the moment. But from what I understand, it should be dead easy just to install, you know, different packages for different architectures. So.
Oh, that's ringing a bell, and I can't what the name of it is.
Yeah, and I'm going to look it up.
Well, it sounds as if this is more 64-bit.
Yeah, but it also sounds
than it
like
is any particular distribution.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's being compounded by your typical, you know, RPM hell.
Yeah, but the point is you enter Debian hell as well if you have exactly the same issue on the Debian side that hasn't been resolved. Yeah, so it's to do with... I agree
with him. It's I don't think it matters really what package management system you're using. You know, you can end up in hell, you know, pretty easily if you start mucking around with it too much.
Yeah, agreed. Hey Ken, I found it.
What did you find?
Oh, the volume is down too low. Hang on, I'm going to try it again. Never mind, I'll use it later.
Okay, no bother. Now, and the one bit that you will all be dying to know is what it was like to upgrade a Fedora 14 to a Fedora 16 machine. And the answer to that is unbelievably uneventful. So much so that everything worked. All the proprietary applications, everything continued to work. The only thing was the audio didn't work, and the first hit on the Fedora document page was check these things, and one of them was do you have the correct permissions, and I thought, hey, had a look, and then just added that to the groups, added myself to that group, and that was it. There was one other issue which I filed a bug on, and that was after using it for a while, something I wanted to talk about but I didn't, was as far as security is concerned, there was three things that I have on my Fedora 16 machines which were really easy to implement. Number one was the hard disk encryption, which was there, never got sent away, it just works. And that's supported on all distros. That's also one thing that I really like about the Crunchbang Linux. And I definitely run that on machines upstairs, which are really, you know, Pentium 3s. And it has no impact whatsoever on, encrypting those hard disks. So that's number one. Number two is the firewall, completely transparent, doesn't get in the way whatsoever. And I completely forgot it was there. And I do an in-map of my machine, and nothing comes up except it, SSH.
Ken, love can it. I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
Sorry, I just noticed that my recording stopped, my multi-track recorder. Can you let me get that started again? I don't know when it stopped.
Yeah, fire ahead.
I've been recording a backup session. It's not multi-track, but it is recording.
I'm doing. Yeah, just as a by the way, if people could FTP their recordings up to the HPR website, I'll in the login section, I will create a directory called Live Show. If you could put your recordings in there, that would be great. Even if we have them, it'd be nice just to have them as a backup. Yep.
You know, with the multi-track, mine's going to be like, I don't know, 20 different audio files. The multi-track records a separate audio file for each person in the room.
Yeah, that's fine. Don't worry. Upload them. Create a subdirectory for yourself and then upload them.
They're in Wave too. Do you want me to compress them? Or
wow. Actually, just scratch what I said. Pokey will coordinate what he needs from people.
If you guys are recording.
I mean, I can tar them and put them on my S3 account.
If you guys are recording, just hang on to them, and I'll if I need them, I'll ask around.
Yeah, I don't want to hit you with like 5 gigs of audio.
Yeah, I hear you. What I'll probably do is I'll figure out at what point the recording stopped, and I'll just ask you for a certain segment because I got it going again, and I didn't lose anything. It was all there. Just I don't know why it stopped.
Okay.
I probably hit a hotkey or something. I'm thinking I was typing in the IRC or something.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, I'll finish off this anyway. So three things I liked about the security. One is the encrypted hard disk. Two is the firewall to stop people getting in. And three is SE Linux, the thing that stops people. If they do get in, it stops the people from doing anything bad. So you got three layers of security. Really, really nice. Again, it shows that Fedora is coming from a more sort of corporate professional background. When I installed my original version of Fedora that got me into this challenge, SE Linux was simply unusable. It was not possible to run a system with SE Linux on.
I remember those days, yeah.
It was just not possible to do. In Fedora 14, it was difficult, and I found myself just turning it off after a while because I couldn't get it to acknowledge the fact that SSH was installed and that it needed to run. But I left it in notification mode, and it was fine. In Fedora 16, there is no issue whatsoever. It works. If you add an additional service, like SSH, for instance, it'll just simply acknowledge that fact and continue running. You don't even see it. I had one occasion where I started something or other, and it just popped up with a bug where it was logging to, I prevented this program from logging to syslog or something like that. And I thought, oh, now what's this going to be? SE Linux, first thing on Monday morning, really don't want to do that. Had a read of the thing, Googled up to see what the application was, whether I should allow it or not. And there was two buttons on the thing. One was allow, disallow, and file a bug. So I clicked allow and then pressed file a bug. I didn't have a Bugzilla account for Fedora, which I created. Typed in my username and password, and then pressed OK, and immediately I had a bug filed. That afternoon, came back, and there was a resolution for the bug, and or that added to the SE Linux thing. You have to admit, lads, that is some fantastic piece of code, and some fantastic response from the guys.
Yeah, I love. I thought I was very impressed with that. It's really changed the way I can use those features now.
It's just amazing that you're, it's amazing from two different points of view. One is to, you have this level of security for free, you know, right there, you've got a firewall, your hard, you know, my computer gets stolen. Well, you know, if it's turned off, nobody can decrypt the hard disk. Now, that's not to say I'm not going to go around and change all my passwords and everything, but at least it puts up a barrier for them, you know, before they hack into my personal files or whatever. And then you've got this firewall that's just there running all the time, you know, that doesn't get in your way, that doesn't stop you. And then you've got another application that's running, making sure that everything that Firefox isn't accessing any files that it shouldn't be, this user isn't accessing stuff that they shouldn't be in the background. And if it does, it prompts you to say, okay, this is going on. We think it's suspicious. Is it suspicious? Yes or no. And the other one, like help your fellow man and submit a bug so that we can fix it so that nobody else is going to be bugged with this thing. And that, folks, was the end of my Fedora route.
How quickly 2 hours went by.
Ken, give it a star rating for us.
I would put it equal to Debian.
Wow, that's high praise.
Yeah, now I have the choice where I'm thinking in work, I just have Debian server running, because, you know, that's just nice, rock solid, stable. But for my desktops, I found myself saying to the guys, you know, you might want to consider installing a Fedora-based distro because of the support for third-party apps.
See, now I didn't know anything about that sort of like support for third-party stuff, because I don't really I don't use any of those things. But that's very interesting to know about and good to know about.
I mean, if you think about it, a lot of the Linux, you know, the proprietary companies like VMware and whatever are all based on Red Hat machines underneath, and things like Checkpoint and whatever. So if there are going to be Linux clients, more than likely they're going to be Red Hat based Linux clients, in which case you've got the libraries for them already in Fedora.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, I did encounter that once. There was a specialized camera that we were using, and the driver was not open source, but they did have an installer for it, and the installer happened to RPM, you know, out of the box. I'm sure you could put it through Alien and convert it and stuff, but it was by default packaged as an RPM.
So whether I would recommend it to people, yes, I would in work. Whether I will continue using it on my laptop, I guess I will. On my desktop, I don't know. I might. I've been using Crunchbang there as well, so I don't know. But you know, choice is good. That is all. You can now talk of something else.
Tip a glass for ice. I'd like to take this opportunity, if I may. If there's anybody listening on the stream and you want to get in on the conversation, this is a round table, and it's a revolving door of sorts. If you want to just pop in anytime, you're welcome to do so. You don't have to feel compelled to talk the whole time. And just pop in and chat with us. We'd love it. Head over to hackerpublicradio.org and see the instructions there for configuring your Mumble so that we'll all be able to hear you. Thanks.
And with that, I just want to put on my admin hat again and say that I've updated the website with the how-to. Thank you very much for Kevin, I think, put that in the show notes, did a how-to on how to configure Mumble for us. So if you want to use that. And also, Dan from the Linux Link Tech Show has got a dial-in number for Asterix, which is, get your pens, everybody get a pen, plus one for the US, so 484-549-1577, and at the prompt, you press 2. If you've got a SIP, then you can connect to 8222 at 98.174.blah-blah-blah. It's on the website. So go to hackerpublicradio.org, and you get the connection details there.
That means you digs it. I see you in the chat room making excuses that you don't have a mic, but now you can phone it in.
He's like, also, I spoke too soon.
Also, I put on the new net, the new radio.net has a script for a Flash Player script for streaming the audio live on the webpage. So that's on hackerpublicradio.org, hobbypublicradio.org, and virtuallug.org.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.